Hello and welcome to Guildcast. This is episode 1 for the week of May 21st, 2010. I'm your host, Sean, and with me is my co-host, Ruby. How you doing, Ruby?
Hi, I'm pretty good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. Now, this is, of course, our first episode back in the world of Guildcast. And for anyone who doesn't know, Guildcast was a podcast I did for quite a few years, about 3 or 4 years, all about ArenaNet's MMO Guild Wars. And we ended that, or I ended that, because you were not my co-host then, and I ended that a couple years ago, about 3 years ago almost. It was right about the time we started hearing a lot about Guild Wars 2 and kind of the information was not really coming out too readily. So we said, we'll put it on hold for a while and see if I want to come back to it in a few years when we hear more about Guild Wars 2. Well, here we are. This is
because we've heard more about Guild Wars 2.
Yes, there has been an avalanche of information about Guild Wars 2 lately. And so I got together with Ruby and said, hey, how would you like to be on a Guildcast podcast about Guild Wars 2? And what'd you say?
And I said no. And then you said, if you don't, you're fired. And I said, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Actually, no, I was very, very excited to be asked.
Yeah, and for anyone who doesn't know, you know, Guild Wars is a game. It's a MMO that is set in a fantasy world, and it released in 2005, April 28th, 2005. Hugely successful. It was the second most popular MMO for a while there, I believe, and then it went to third, and now it's fourth. But that's only because it's so old. It just celebrated its fifth anniversary last month, not even a month ago. So a lot of the changes, a lot of the things that people were discovering with Guild Wars 1, they wanted changed. Like no jumping and a heavily instanced world, things like that. They wanted these types of things changed. And ArenaNet basically said, well, we can't really do what we have now, so what we're going to do is make a brand new game, and that will be Guild Wars 2. And they announced this in, what was it, 2007, I believe?
2007 is when it was announced, and there was originally a beta plan for 2008.
Yeah.
Which obviously did not happen, but I think it's going to be worth the wait.
Right, yeah, and it's one of those things where they've changed a lot of things. A lot of the original things that they told us that were going to happen, of course, you know, these things happen. They change as they figure out that they don't work. But what we're going to talk, these are the types of things we're going to talk about on this show. So for anyone who has never heard of Guildcast before, maybe this is the first time you've heard my voice and Ruby's voice or even the word Guildcast, this is something we did for a long time, and we're happy to bring it back, and we're really excited about being a part of the Guild Wars community again. I think that this is something that even when I ended Guildcast, you know, 3 years ago, when I quote-unquote ended Guildcast, it was one of those things where I always said, I will come back if Guild Wars 2 looks like it's something that I will want to play. And
right. It's,
I think that's an understatement now because it's now my most highly anticipated game, of the next 2 years, I would say. And it's pretty incredible all the things that they have told us are going to happen in this game so far. And these are the things that we're going to get into, of course, in this show. This is just an intro show, so we're just kind of letting you know who we are and everything and a little bit catching you up on the basics of where we're at in the Guild Wars 2 world. And in future episodes, we're going to flesh those out a lot more. We're going to talk more about the details of everything, like the event system and the combat and the skills and everything that we can get our hands on. And you can bet we'll have interviews and we'll have more in-depth. I mean, everything that all of you old Guildcast listeners, you know, have grown to love about Guildcast, we're going to do that same stuff.
I think it's going to be a pretty big summer for Guild Wars, and I mean, we've already got so much to talk about that this is just going to have to be an overview, and then we'll dive into all the little details in the future. But
well,
there's already a ton of information and more coming over the summer, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, they're really leaking things out just about every week, so that's why we want to make this, at least for now, we want to make this a weekly podcast and try to stick by that. And but I guess for anyone who doesn't know us personally, well, as personally as they can listen to our voices. let's introduce ourselves. You want to go first?
No, because I didn't know we were going to do this, so I'm going to let you do it first, and then I'll see.
Oh, thanks.
What you've got in mind here.
Well, okay, so basically what it is I'm Sean Schuster is my full name, and I'm the editor-in-chief at Massively.com. And when I first started Guildcast, I was not the editor-in-chief at Massively.com. I was a graphic designer. And a lot has changed since then. You know, it basically, Guildcast got me in the door in gaming journalism and where I am today. And that's another reason why I wanted to kind of get back into it, because it was always the number one thing that I had going for me podcast-wise at that time, and it really got me into where I'm at now. So basically what I do, I mean, my entire job is writing about games or managing people who write about games. And and Ruby, of course, works for me. She's the Guild Wars columnist and over at Massively. So this is, we actually also do a podcast called Massively Speaking, which is the Massively podcast. And if you don't know anything about Massively or Massively Speaking or any of that stuff, head on over to Massively.com. And right there on the right sidebar, you'll scroll down a little bit and you'll see a little thing that says Massively Speaking. And that's us talking more.
And there's actually a whole lot of Guild Wars 2 information there too.
Yeah, thanks to you, right?
It can be found. Possibly a little enthusiastic about it. Just a tad. That's probably where most of my words come out for work. So there's quite a bit there to be had.
Yeah, so you are the expert. Are you the Guild Wars expert? Can we say?
Let's not put that kind of pressure on me. I don't know how good I feel about that, but I'm into it, so.
Well, I think it's
give me credit for enthusiasm.
The important thing is that you're being recognized by a lot of people, including ArenaNet, for the work and knowledge and research and everything that you put into the column, and that's another reason why I thought that you and I should do this podcast. Get together and just talk about what we love. I mean, I've taken a long break from Guild Wars 1, myself, but you haven't, right? You've been faithful the whole time, right?
I have, but to be fair, I got into it a lot later than you did. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it is. I've gotten some really, really nice compliments from ArenaNet about pieces that I've done for Massively, and that is so exciting. It's so nice to be recognized just for doing something that you love and being told that you did it well. So,
that was
very, very nice to hear, and I hope to earn some more of those nice little compliments.
Not by me.
Well, but your insults are cool too. So. I hope to be insulted by you more soon.
For anyone who doesn't know, go ahead and listen to a few episodes of Massively Speaking. You'll kind of hear kind of the normal Sean and Ruby, how we interact with each other. And you can count on that being in this podcast as well, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I don't think we're capable of not doing that.
No, that's very true.
So, okay, so do I have to do my introductory thing now?
Yeah, just tell everyone... Mm-hmm. If you like long walks on the beach and all that kind of stuff.
I want to talk about my feelings. I like hugs and kittens and rainbows and sparkle ponies.
Oh, sparkle.
I had to do that. Yeah, I know. I had to go there. Okay, so my name is Ruby Bear. And several years back, this is actually funny how I got into all of this. Several years back, my husband said, I found this kind of cool podcast and I'm listening to it because there's this game called Guild Wars. I want to see if I want to buy it or not. And it was Guildcast. So we got to listening, and I actually remember this. I think it's probably a little odd that I remember this. I was laying on the sofa reading a book, and I looked up, and he was running around in pre-searing, and I watched for a couple minutes and went, can I try that? That looks kind of cool. And it just all went downhill from there.
Yeah.
So two of our kids play now, and my husband and I both play.
That's awesome.
And yeah, and that's how I got to know you. And I think last spring you commented that Massively was going to be hiring soon, and I filled out an application.
Yep. And I told you to get lost.
And so I went over your head. Because I think it wasn't even you that hired me. That wasn't, was it?
Well,
you got the final call, or?
Well, at the time I wasn't editor-in-chief, I was managing editor, so it wasn't completely my call, but.
But there was influence elsewhere too.
Yeah, it wasn't. I think that's a whole episode. Right?
That's a whole big story. But yeah, so I filled out an application and I write about video games for a living, and it is absolutely the most incredible thing ever.
It is, isn't it?
It's so cool that this is our job.
Yeah. So I mean, so here you are, and it's so ironic that you started into MMOs by listening to Guildcast, and here you are.
By listening to Guildcast.
Here you are on Guildcast.
Ah, it's so cool.
See, we're still trying to decide. Well, I guess we've pretty much decided that it's not going to be called Guildcast 2, and it's not going to be called Guildcast Revisited or, you know, Reborn or...
it's just unnecessary foof.
Yeah, and nothing like that. So it's still going to be Guildcast, but we are starting again at episode 1, just not to confuse anyone. And for anyone who doesn't know, the old Guildcast ended at episode 96. So, and a lot of people said, why didn't you just go to 100?
Go to 100.
Come on, it's right there. I think at the time, though, it was just, there was nothing to talk about. You know, we were, what was it, 2008, well, I believe?
It was actually 2008. We said 2007, but I started playing in 2007.
Yeah.
And it was about a year later that Guildcast ended. And honestly, Guild Wars has got such staying power. I mean, for a 5-year-old game to be in the top 4, according to that survey that we looked at last week, that's really something. But still, there's only so much you can talk about. And I think 96 episodes covered it nicely.
Well, what was funny about that is, you know, especially in any MMO, when you talk about it, a specific game, it changes so dramatically every week. And Guild Wars is a good example of that because they're always doing skill balances and introducing new events and all these things. So there really could have been more things I could have talked about. You know, they did add a lot to the game since then, but it was one of those things where I couldn't really do it on a regular basis. And even like the I guess it was the 4-year anniversary of the podcast, which was last November, November 19th, I had a few Guildcast listeners write to me and say, hey, why don't you bring it back just for the 4-year anniversary, you know?
Aww.
And I thought that was really cool. But, you know, at that time, of course, I wasn't really ready to do it. But now that we're hearing all this information about Guild Wars 2, it seems like the perfect time to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's cool that you had listeners still wanting to know on the 4th birthday of the podcast.
Yeah. Actually, still to this day, when I jump into Guild Wars, I'll get PMs from people saying that they really enjoyed Guildcast and when's the next episode coming out. And
I think you probably need to bust out Guildcast and log into game.
Yeah.
And let people know.
Yeah, actually, for anyone who doesn't know, I have a character actually named Guildcast in the game itself. But yeah, it's been great. You know, the whole, like I was saying before, you know, the whole lifespan of Guildcast really got me to this point right here. I owe so much to it. So it's only natural to bring it back and to get back into it, because Guild Wars, not only is it the game that started it all for me, it's the game that I still know better than any other game out there, you know, front to back, side to side, everywhere. But Guild Wars 2 looks to be, even with all that other stuff aside, it looks to be the biggest, most amazing game to come out in a long time.
ArenaNet, they don't do anything by halves.
No.
I mean, and that's the thing that I think ArenaNet is infamous for, being so hush-hush about their games and saying, we're not prepared to talk about that at this time. We're not prepared to talk about that. And then all at once they just release something amazing.
Yeah.
So it's worth the wait. It's absolutely worth the wait. And I think they're breaking a lot of new ground here.
I think it's funny because only they can do something like that. You know, there were so many people.
And get away with
it. Yeah, there were so many people who just left the game. They were really disturbed by the fact that there was no information. They said, how can ArenaNet do this to us? How can they do this to the players? And it's just so funny because I wanted to see the looks on all of their faces when all this information came out. And they're like, they're scowling, you know, they're so angry at ArenaNet. And then the information comes out and they get this bright look on their face. And they're like,
oh, it's okay then.
Yeah, Guild Wars. That was me, actually.
Yeah.
I wasn't really mad at the game or mad at ArenaNet or anything like that. I think it was one of those things where it was just like, okay, you know, Guild Wars admittedly is a pretty basic game. You know, it's pretty light as far as it doesn't have the features that a lot of current modern MMOs have. So it was one of those things where I've moved on to other games and explored a lot of the other features that make me happy about MMOs today, the current state of MMOs. But the fact that they're introducing all of that stuff plus more, you know, they're reinventing the whole genre like they did with Guild Wars 1 5 years ago, that's very exciting, I think.
Yeah, Guild Wars is a very streamlined game. I mean, there's, yes, you can't jump. That is, I think that should be the game slogan, Guild Wars, you can't jump. But there is, and it's a great, great introductory MMO. And I remember several years back, you would go on and on about crafting, and I just laughed at you. I was like, yeah, crafting, woohoo, look at me now. I love crafting so much once I was introduced to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of that's coming now. I mean, this is, and it's, I think it's going to be bigger and better than anything we've got on the market right now.
Yes, very true. And we're not just, I mean, we are fanboys and girls.
Oh my gosh, I'm fangirling all over the place.
but I think, you know, we'll take a realistic look at the information that's presented and, until and beyond launch. You know, we're starting this pretty early because of the information that's released, but also, you know, it's a very exciting time to be a Guild Wars fan because of all of the hype. I mean that in the most positive way possible, but all of the hype and everything.
Oh, hype is a good thing.
Yeah, the things that are building up until launch, and when launch happens in, what, 2040? No.
We're not going to talk about that.
No, they're saying possibly by next year, but who knows? It's one of those.
Actually, you know, what? I'm gonna stop for a second because that's something that we should probably point out. I think it's GameStop that is saying it's going to be released in November of this year. Mm. No.
Yeah,
they do that. They put in placeholder dates. And there is no launch date. There's not even a beta date at this point. Yeah. So it is not coming out November of this year. It's just not.
Yeah, I think that they do that. Amazon does that too. Just kind of I guess it's something with the business model. I'm not sure, but yeah, nothing has been announced. So that is.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, we will tell you.
Yes, there'll be like a special breaking episode.
Yeah.
Live on the scene,
and it'll just be us yelling a lot.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and get into what we know so far about Guild Wars 2.
Yeah.
Because there is quite a bit. You know, they've been releasing information every week, and I don't know how long they're going to continue doing that every week, but it seems like it's, I don't know, it's one of those things that someone should make a podcast about.
Right? I think so. Hey, let's do that.
So let's start out with a little bit on kind of earlier in the year when we started learning about the war in Kryta and what little bits of lore we know so far.
And, you know, it started out as little bits of lore. It is so, so far beyond that now. It's not even funny. If you're a Guild Wars fan, you know about the whole White Mantle Shining Blade conflict, which started way back in Kryta in Prophecies. And that started continuing, I think, at GDC. And you were there. When was GDC?
That was in March, early March.
Okay, GDC in March, they handed out these, and by they, Regina Buena-Obra and Martin Kirstein, handed out these little flyers that just said obey and dismantle and had a QR code on them. Mm-hmm. And that's it. They were just little half sheets. And when you deciphered that QR code, it took you to a couple of websites on the Guild Wars site. And that has turned into this huge thing. It was just a viral campaign that exploded because the really hardcore Guild Wars fans are very passionate. Mm-hmm. And I actually asked Regina a while back. She said it was just a very few pamphlets. I mean, just like a little handful of flyers, and it exploded from there, just from people posting it on forums. And it's gone into game now, and what has happened, the White Mantle and Shining Blade are escalating this conflict that they had that we saw back in Prophecies. The White Mantle are really trying to clamp down on the citizens of Kryta, and martial law is the phrase that came to mind for me. And the Shining Blade are fighting back a little bit harder. Princess Salma, who we saw in Temple of the Ages, well, way back in Prophecies again, she is reclaiming the throne. She's the rightful heir to the throne in Lion's Arch. So she's back there now. And that's just, there's a little bit of new content in game. There are new dialogues. There are new NPCs that are changing and talking to you. And it's just going from there. And what this is the big lead-in into Guild Wars 2. Mm-hmm. Because this is going to continue. And ArenaNet has said this is going to continue into Guild Wars 2. This is part of that bridge.
Well, what about all this stuff with Gwen? Mm-hmm. Now, this is actually, I thought, pretty interesting because it was something that you actually pointed out pretty early on about the Thackeray descendant, I guess you could say.
I totally called it. I called it as soon as I saw that name, and I am so pleased with myself for that. That Guild Wars 2 trailer that we got back in November or December was, the human said, "I'm Logan Thackeray." And I went, that's got to be some sort of descendant, because Kieran Thackeray is a member of the Ebon Vanguard that we see every Winter's Day in the Hall of Monuments. Mm-hmm. Or I'm sorry, in the Eye of the North. And he's invading our Hall of Monuments now. Kieran Thackeray hands out the Winter's Day quests. And two, this is the other half of that. While all of this Shining Blade stuff and White Mantle is going on over here, I'm gesturing because you can see me.
Totally.
Yeah. Over here in the Eye of the over here in the Eye of the North, if your character finished all of the Winter's Day quests that Kieran Thackeray handed out this year, he will come into your Hall of Monuments where Gwen is sulking. And I say that with all love because I am such a Gwen fan. So he will come in there, and he's got a little thing for Gwen, and he kind of wants to get to know her a little bit better. And he will start this dialogue with her, trying to get her to come out on a picnic and just trying to get her to come out of her shell a little bit. And at the same time, over in a third area, you've got, do you remember Zin's quest? Did you do that with all of his out-of-control golems?
Yeah.
Okay, over here, you've also, back in Rotasum, got this trial of Zin. And they're kind of coming down on him for those three golems getting out of control and trying to kill people. And at the time, I'm not too sure how many people figured, all right, this is all going to come together at some point. You did some of them, you did others, you just did what you were interested in, and then you moved on and played Guild Wars. Well, those three events are all intersecting now. Kieran Thackeray sent you off on a scavenger hunt to try to get some romantic candles and booze for his lady love, who completely turned him down. I felt so bad for him. But now this is coming together. The Shining Blade has a camp in Kreta where they're hiding from the White Mantle and planning their strategies. Well, they've started sending people out. Evenia, do you remember her?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Evenia. I'm just making sure. Evenia has gone to the Eye of the North to try to recruit the Ebon Vanguard. So Kieran's gotten fed up with Gwen, and he wants nothing to do with her at this point. So he's told Evenia, yes, I will come to the Shining Blade camp, and I'll help you, and we'll see what we can do for you. And Gwen doesn't want him to go, so there's this whole little soap opera going on in the background. But the thing is, none of this will happen. You're going to get stuck at certain events in the game if you haven't kept up with the Asura and Zin over here, and Gwen and Kieran over in the Eye of the North, and Princess Salma in Lion's Arch, she's back in Lion's Arch now. And these things are all starting to intertwine a little bit as this conflict escalates and leads us toward Guild Wars 2.
So what you're saying is, basically Kieran is going to hook up with Gwen, right? That's the part we want to hear about.
They are... ArenaNet has said they are destined to marry.
So they're going to hook up.
They're going to hook up. You're such a dirtbag.
Well, we know they're going to hook up because of Logan Thackeray. And it's important to point out, too, this is, what, 250 years later?
This is not their kid.
Yeah, this is not their kid, unless, like, no, this is just not their kid.
I just don't.
So this has got to be, like, their great-grandkid, I guess. I mean, it's got to be way down the line there.
Yeah, it's pretty far down there. But the other thing, too, that has been said, Gwen and Kieran marry, and they found Ebonhawk, which is the last human. That's the big human stronghold in Guild Wars 2.
Is that where they hook up?
I hate you.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, the center of Ebonhawk is their bed.
And awesome.
Yeah. I thought you'd like that. I know you got a little thing for Gwen. But yes, Ebonhook can be where they hook up, if that makes you happy.
Okay.
Pretty sure I just said Ebonhook.
Ebonhook up?
Oh, no, it's going to be called that forever now. So, yeah, all of this is kind of starting to come together and form this bridge that will take us into the big hookup in Guild Wars 2.
Awesome. So, okay. I think it's interesting in this aspect of it because they realize that the community loves Gwen. And I say the community, not just me. The community loves Gwen, and they love the fact that, you know, they've kind of latched on to this person who has been there since pre-Searing. And, you know, that's why they brought her into Eye of the North. And here they are bringing, you know, her DNA, I guess you could say. that's horrible. Her bloodline down through into Guild Wars 2.
Into Guild Wars 2. And, you know, I have to... Gwen, young Gwen, was one of the first NPCs we really, really encountered in pre-Searing in Guild Wars 2. I mean, she has, like you said, been there since the very, very beginning. And I have said this before. It is when we got to Eye of the North and we got that cinematic and she said, "My name is Gwen." I had this huge smile on my face.
Yeah.
It was so cool to see that she's still there and the community's had such a good response to her. And honestly, I really think they feel for her to a point. I mean, if you don't know Gwen's story through the bonus mission pack, we learned quite a bit through there. She was captured by the Char during the Searing, and she spent a couple of years in a Char slave camp and eventually escaped and made her way north, where she met Captain Langmar and became part of the Ebon Vanguard. So she's really been traumatized, and she's got some things that she's dealing with, which is why Kieran Thackeray's having such a tough time with her. So, but she's got, there's a really good backstory there.
But it's cool that the writers picked that out and decided to, you know, keep up with it, just because of the fact that there's been such a good response to Gwen in general. So that's basically the lore. I mean, we have so much more to the lore, of course, but this is an introduction episode, and we're not going to get too far into this stuff. But there's also, there's one book that is it coming out, or has it already come out?
No, it's coming out this summer.
Okay.
Ghosts of Ascalon.
And from what we heard before, I think it was back at PAX 2008, or maybe I think it was 2008, we heard that there were going to be 3 books before Guild Wars 2 launched. Well, I don't see, I mean, unless they all 3 release at the same time.
The book launch.
Yeah, the big book launch. Then I don't see this happening before the game launches, but I don't know. We'll see how they handle that exactly. But we do know at least one of them is coming out for sure, and this is supposed to fill in the gap between Guild Wars 1 and Guild Wars 2, that 250-year gap right there. So you can bet that we'll be talking about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll be reading those and talking about those for sure. So let's move on a little bit past the lore, and let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that they've been revealing. And one of them is costumes and the artwork. Kristen Perry she's kind of the person who does all the costuming in Guild Wars 2. And she started out doing, on Guild Wars 1, she did a lot of the elementalist armor and clothing. And
she did pretty much all the LA armor for Nightfall.
Yeah, for Nightfall. She's been on the team for a long time. And here she is designing this new costumes for Guild Wars 2. And there was a great article where it showed some of the character models with this new clothing and new armor. And you have to think, you know, this is 250 years later, the advances are there. You know, it's no longer is it, you know, stitched together potato sacks and you know, mm-hmm. plate armor. It's now, you know, like leather and like, I don't even know what they call that stuff. But, you know, it's like more intricate. There's the dresses. I mean, it's more like, if you think about what 250 years ago from now, what would that be, 1760, something like that?
Yeah, okay. I was not prepared for that.
So, I mean, you think about how far away that was and how people dressed in 1760. You know, that was like Benjamin Franklin days. And that's, you know, they dress a little bit differently. I mean, I dress the same as Benjamin Franklin, but that's just that's a personal choice.
Benjamin Franklin wore pants.
Oh, okay. Then never mind.
Just the coat.
So the clothing, I think, is very important to kind of get us immersed in this whole, you know, the 250 year later thing. And there are a lot of other things also that kind of reflect this. And we'll get into that right now. And this is like the weapons. We'll talk about the weapons, skills, combat, professions, all this stuff together. Because most significantly, I think the weapons, as it plays a part of 250 years later, you're going to find rifles. And you're going to find, you know, gunpowder and probably cannons and bigger siege weapons other than giant scorpions, right?
Yeah, but the scorpions are kind of awesome. You have to.
Oh, yeah.
You have to give them that.
Oh yeah, but I mean, it's cool that we are going to see all this technology, and of course, the Acern were always big on technology anyway. You know, we saw that in Eye of the North, mm-hmm. and with the golems that they made, they created these, you know, magical robots basically, and we're going to see more of that. We already know that, and we already know that the Acern mm-hmm. are going to be in the game. So I'm really excited to see what they have. They're probably going to be more of like the engineer race, and it'll be cool to see what, in this mythical land of Tyria, what 250 years later can really bring.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've seen the concept art and the screenshots of the Asura sitting on the arm of the golem mm-hmm. and pushing the little button on her wrist unit.
Yeah.
So we already know they've got a little more control over them. Hopefully this whole Zen mess won't happen again.
Yeah. And then in Guild Wars 3, it'll be like post-apocalyptic and... Wait. No.
Little bits of golems everywhere.
That would be cool.
That's now you're just wanting to play Fallen Earth, and that's not what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. So I guess kind of, you know, going along with the weapons and the 250 years later and all that, one of the big things that they've also discussed was combat and how it plays into skills okay. and the professions. They've already said that there's going to be 8 professions, right?
8 professions.
But didn't they say that 2 of those are going to be brand new?
2 of them are going to be new. So we're getting, we're losing a couple from Guild Wars, and I'm not sure what yet.
Assassin. Please, assassin.
Oh, I liked my assassin.
Anyone who didn't listen to the original Guildcast knows that I always like to joke around against assassins, but I really love them. They are great. How's that?
Yeah, you shut up after Shadowform showed up.
Yeah, Shadowform's pretty awesome. So I guess right now what we know, though, for sure is we know that there's an elementalist, which makes you happy, mm-hmm. right?
Yay! Yeah, Sean said they did that just for me, and I'm sure they were like, uh-huh, that's exactly what we did.
Wait, Ruby who? What?
Yeah, exactly.
But I think another one, this is kind of hinted at throughout mm-hmm. The profession articles that they write over at the ArenaNet blog. They hint at a warrior. You know, they keep mentioning, you know, if a warrior had this skill, and if a warrior did this, and if you get an elementalist and a warrior together in a group, then this can happen. So it's like, but I think it's funny to point out that they aren't capitalizing warrior.
LA is capitalized, yeah. Warrior is not.
Yeah, so it's like they are officially calling it an elementalist, but are they going to officially call it a warrior? And I think that's the question. I think they will, though. I think they'll still call it a warrior.
There, and I've said this about 1,000 times before, ArenaNet doesn't do anything by accident. Mm-hmm. I'm viewing that as a hint.
Yeah, very true.
So, but we're still waiting for the next big, class reveal.
Yeah, should be any time now. And I'm waiting for Mesmer and Necro. Those are the two I'm waiting for.
You know, I think I'm going to give you a little bit of hope. If we go back to costumes for a second, that first one looks a little Mesmerish to me.
So. Yeah, it really does. Actually, I would rather have Mesmer than Necro. I know that's crazy coming from me because my main is a Necro. I say main. I don't really... I don't really play just one. I can't really do
that. My main mule is a Necro.
No.
But you love the Mesmer.
Yeah, I love the Mesmer. I think fast casting is one of the greatest inventions in any MMO ever. And I just love so much of it. Usually what I do is when I play my Mesmer, I'll play it as a Mesmer Necro, and then when I play my Necro, I'll play it as a Necro Mesmer. Because I just love curses and I love interrupts and things like that. So great. We haven't really seen much, though, on the Necro. You know, what could possibly be a Necro? And I think what's interesting is they had that piece of concept art that came out a few weeks ago. Well, I guess a little over a month ago, and it's like it looks like a watercolor silhouette of a party of people.
Oh, that made me so mad. I was like, "What is this?"
Well, what's funny is we got that, and it was just. Basically just blank, you know, or not blank, but it was just like a paintbrushes, you know, slapped on a canvas of these very rough silhouettes of what are obviously people, but you don't, that's all you really know about it. So then when they introduced the elementalist, they added the Ellie right over her spot on that concept art, on that piece of you know, painting.
Yeah, they filled in books.
So then if that makes you want to look at the rest of them. You know, you see some small ones that you know are a Cern. You see some larger ones that you know are, you know, the Norn or Char, of course. The Char are much bigger. Mm-hmm. And so we knew that these races were coming, so that's not a surprise. But what the surprise will be is what these classes actually are. And it's really hard to tell from that little piece of work, which they knew. You know, they know they're doing that to us. They love it.
They're enjoying this entirely too much. But yeah, now we're all squinting at the rest of the silhouette going, okay, that could be a Mesmer.
Yeah. And I saw a little part on the bottom, and I'm hoping it's a minion. I hope it's like a, you know, like a bone whore.
Well, that would be awesome.
But yeah, like you said, from the costumes, it looks like there will at least be a Mesmer, which will make me happy, even if there is no Necros. But
hey, maybe bone horror will be a playable class.
Hey, there you go. Jagged horror. These things are ugly.
So yeah, we know that's coming. We just don't know when.
Yeah. And then I guess, you know, branching off from that is we have the races, which I was touching on a little bit. The Asura, the Norn, Char, Human, and the Silvari. I'm really interested in. That's what I should make, a Silvari Mesmer. It's not like I'm not going to make one of everything anyway.
Well, yeah, but that's the big question that everybody asks. What are you going to make first? Yeah. What are you going to make first?
Yeah. So the Silvari, we can talk more in depth about a lot of these later, but those are the basics of the new races. Going into skills and combat now.
This was interesting. There was so much new stuff to take in here.
Yes. I think that this is what really gets me excited, the way that they approach these things. And whoever is the brainiac who puts together, I mean, a lot of this is already existing in other games in parts, but they put it all together to work in this game. And they're like, let's take this from this game. And this, I mean, I'm not sure, you know, that's exactly how the thought process goes, but
not directly, but the ideas are there.
Yeah. It's a lot of stuff we've already seen, combined to make something that we've never seen. And with combat, what it is, we'll now have a 10-slot skill bar. And the first five of those depend on the weapon you have equipped and your profession. So let's say you're a warrior with a sword. You will have – your first five skills will be unique to a warrior with a sword, basically. And what I think is cool, too, is they mention a lot of the skills in these blog posts that they do, in these reveals. Mm-hmm. And they mention skills that we already know, like 100 blades and, you know, and rush and things like that. And that makes me happy because it means that they're almost kind of rewarding, you know, long-term Guild Wars fans who already know what these skills do. And that, you know, skills are such a huge part of Guild Wars. And a lot of people have memorized exactly what every single one of these skills do, even after, you know, the changes that happen regularly. So it's cool to see that they're not reinventing the names of the skills. Maybe they might reinvent what they do.
Or maybe we'll get some new stuff. But
yeah, I'm sure we'll get new stuff too. But I think it's cool that they're kind of paying homage to the naming system of these things.
Yeah, all those old familiar ones that I hope we get Can't Touch This. Just because that was one of the better named ones. I loved that.
That was a Paragon one, right?
That was a Paragon one,
so they would have to bring.
And we don't know that Paragon.
Yeah, they'd have to bring. Did we see any spears in that concept?
Oh man, we got to put this whole thing on hold while I go look.
Man, I really like the Paragon though. I think it's a really cool class. It's like a. I got mine through Nightfall, but I didn't really play it much more than that. But yeah, I like the Paragon. It's really cool. So no spears.
I haven't seen any spears. Okay. That bone horror might have a spear, it looks like.
Oh, little bone horror paragons.
What would they shout?
Actually,
and if they shout too hard, will like bits fall off?
Yeah. What they need is like undead assassins from all the ones that die all the time in PvP. No.
That would be great.
The email address is
is not mine. I didn't say that.
No.
That would be great, a horde of undead assassins.
That would be scary. So the rest of the skill bar, you know, the remaining five on there have to do with race and profession. And these are ones that you can actually choose. Now, the way to make it sound, I'm not sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you can't really choose the first five. They kind of just pop up.
You can't, but here's what's cool. They're linked to your weapon. If you are running just out across the map and you change your weapon, those skills will change too to reflect your weapon.
Oh, okay. So it's an on the fly thing. You don't have to go back to town.
Yes, and it's so cool.
Yeah, that will be a big welcome change. So then the remaining five will be based on race and profession, and I think that it's important to note that a lot of people have said, well, this seems pretty restrictive. You know, you have these skills that are pretty much chosen for you. You know, the first five, and then you can only choose five. That seems a lot worse. Well, it's actually not, and they address this in one of the Q&As where they say that someone actually figured out the combination choices, and it's in the millions. You know,
it's insane.
Yeah, the different things you can do. Plus, now this gets into combat a little bit, but there are also combinations between classes. Now, they're not going to have dual classes anymore. You're not going to be able to be like a mesmer monk or a warrior monk or whatever, but you can still do. On your profession, you can mix your skills with another profession in the party, in the group. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the examples that they gave was actually really exciting. They said, like, if an elementalist throws down an electric storm, you know, like a static wall in front of you, and a warrior shoots a rifle, that bullet will actually get charged electrically and cause extra damage when it hits the enemy on the other side of that wall. And the same with, like, a flame wall, and the warrior runs up, and he has Cyclone Axe, and it'll actually add fire damage to your axe as you're spinning around in this firewall. So I think that's insanely...
Yeah, it'll blow that fire outward.
Yeah, it'll cause it.
It's so
cool. It'll cause the fire damage to go outward toward the enemies. That is so cool. And they say that there are hundreds of these combinations that are possible.
Now, two things about that, and actually it's important to know because we will get called on it if we don't. Those five skills that you can choose, one is a res and one is a self-heal.
Yeah, so that...
And you have a pool to pull from there. But I think it's kind of stupid to go out without a self-heal anyway. But the other thing that they mention about the way this works is that it will... I mean, yeah, right now you can do anything you want as far as skills, because it's not as restricted, which leaves your party members the option to come up with some really, really stupid skill bars. I'm sorry, but I have been in a group with a monk that had four hard reses.
Oh, yeah.
Please explain this to me. So in a way, they're kind of protecting us from ourselves.
They're anti-pugging us. Is it?
Yes, and I am not making that up about the hard reses,
yeah,
by the way.
Well,
that is a true story.
I think it's funny. Our good friend Loudon Swain, who has been on the original Guildcast many times.
Yeah, it was him. Oh, no.
No, he actually liked to do things like take screenshots of himself with a full bar of a res sig, or, you know, things like that, like a full bar of, like, Firestorm. He just liked to do that. So sorry, Loudon. I don't think that's going to be possible anymore.
You can't do that anymore?
He's going to be upset, but...
I did. You know what? I had somebody do that, and I don't know. I actually don't know the mechanics of how you can ping the full res sig bar, but I joined a party on my assassin in my guild once, and it was all in good fun, so I did laugh, but they said, okay, she's here, I'm ready, and they pinged, and it was all res sigs. Shut up! So, but anyway, that helps you at least make a sane bar.
Yeah. Which, I don't know. I'm sure people will still find ways to do some crazy stuff. And, you know, balance is going to be going on forever, I'm sure. But I think it's cool that they've structured it. They haven't limited it. I think they've structured it a little bit better where they, you know, I think it's good to have a heal on there, and it's good to have, you know, your res sig. When you're a monk or whatever the healer class will be, it'll be interesting to see if that one self-heal will that still be mandatory, you know? I mean, since the rest of the bar will be heals, I don't know.
Well, they said there's a pool that you can pull from.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it's not just, okay, here's your res sig. You get to choose those two predetermined skills in that second half of your skill bar. You get to choose from a predetermined pool. It's not too limited.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I don't think this is limiting at all. I think it's different. Different is not always bad.
Yeah.
So. Okay. So next.
Talk a little bit more. I want to talk a little bit more about combat, though, because I think I think it's interesting to note a lot of the other aspects of it. you know, now we have firearms, which will be a big part of it. We have different weapons. They actually name the different weapons. Like, they go through, there are two-handed weapons, and they've already named all of the two-handed types of weapons, like mm-hmm. swords, axes, things like that. Then, or hammers will be another one. Then there are a lot of one-handed ones, which will be like, you know, like daggers and things like that. Offhands, they're going to have as well. But with offhands, they say that there are certain classes that will be able to have a sword for an offhand, which will do have a completely different skill set than that same sword in the main hand of a warrior. So, so the skills not only are based on the profession and weapon, but also which hand you have it in, which I think is interesting mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, if you're wielding a weapon in an offhand, that those five skills go to a 3-2 split mm-hmm. to reflect what you're carrying.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting to know. We haven't seen combat in action. We haven't seen if it will be as fluid as it is now in Guild Wars 1.
Well, actually, we've seen a little bit. There were 5 videos of the Elementalist casting.
Yeah, but I mean, like,
yeah, nothing huge, but it was a tiny.
Well, I mean, like, hands-on, like, actually get to play it. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm looking for.
Ah, yes, please.
Yeah, that would be the fun part.
I think you and I should be allowed to do that.
I think they should fly us out to Seattle right now and let us do that.
Even better. All right, we will await our plane tickets in the mail.
So let's get into the last part of this. We saved the best for last, I think. Well,
oh yes. Oh, I love this.
This is the dynamic event system. This is something you can bet we're going to have a whole few shows on this, just dedicated to it. So we're not going to go over every single detail. Although I say that now, we probably will because it's so exciting.
That's
what we do. Essentially, the dynamic event system, they don't want to call them quests anymore. So they want to get away from that and get away from the stigma that's attached to, you know, an NPC standing out there with a exclamation mark over his head and you talk to him. And then there's this wall.
The big green exclamation.
Yeah, and then there's like this big wall of text, and you skip it, and then you ask people how to get to the quest objective. They want to bypass all of that, which I can understand because I hate that personally. I'm not a big fan of quests to begin with because a lot of them are the same, and they're go kill 10 of these, now go run this love letter to this girl, you know, and stuff like that. And it's so, like, it's so been done before. So they realize this and they want to change it. They want to make it so that when you have to kill 10, like an example, they use 10 ogres. Those ogres aren't standing in a field, staring off into the distance, picking daisies. Those ogres are, you know, if this NPC says, please save my village, ogres are coming to kill it.
Ogres are coming to kill it.
Yeah, ogres are coming to destroy that village. And if you don't stop them, they will destroy that village. And that is exciting to me. It's like one of those things where you're more immersed in what's going on around you. And when you have this immersion present, then you're more into the game. You're more into coming back to play it tomorrow or later in the day, you know. And it's not just a grind fest. It's not just like, oh, I have to get my guy to max level. You know, you're like, I have to go back because those ogres are going to take over that village, you know. And they've talked about the timeline on a lot of these too. Like, it could last anywhere from hours to as short as like 15 minutes. But here's what I think is really exciting about these is that a lot of them are chains. So let's say that those ogres are coming to destroy that village. And let's say you don't defeat them, and they actually do not destroy it, but let's say they take it over and they kill all the NPCs and while you're hiding in a bush somewhere watching.
Because you suck.
Yeah. Speak for yourself. It's one of those things where now the ogres have the village, right? So what are they going to do? They're going to call for reinforcements. They're going to fortify the village with, like, kind of their own way. They're going to start building siege towers or just getting some guards in there. Once they do that, they're going to want to expand. So they're going to start looking at nearby human villages or, you know, whatever villages to attack, and they're going to want to do it again to the next village. So if you don't stop them, they're going to take over this entire area. And if you sit in the bush and watch them do this, then you kind of think, okay, this is the part of the chain that I need to stop. You know, I need to cut this right here. So you get your friends together You don't even have to join a party. You just tell your friends, or you can say in, you know, in, I don't know how they're going to have chat set up, but you could say like, hey, I need some help over here. These ogres are starting to build siege towers, and people will come and help you, and you don't even have to join a group with them. You don't have to say, you know, LFG, monk, you know, and you don't have to do all this stuff. You just basically, people run in, attack these ogres, and they can, you know, make them go back to where they came from, basically.
Yeah.
And I think that it's something that was first tried, well, not first tried, but it was tried in Warhammer Online with the public quest system. The public quest system was amazing. It was innovative. It was, the way they did it was great, but the main problem with that was when there aren't enough people around, you have this predefined public quest that can't really change. Like, so you have to kill 100 of these guys in stage one of the public quest, so you do it. Then you have to, the stage two of that public quest is to kill 5 of these bosses. Well, you can't do that if you're by yourself or you and your friend.
Oh my gosh.
So what happens? The time runs out and the public quest resets and you don't get anything for it. And it's so frustrating. And that was the failure of the public quest system. Well, Guild Wars 2 is changing that. They're making it scalable where if you say you have 20 people in there and they're all fighting these ogres and then 5 of them have to go eat dinner. So what's going to happen is the quest is actually going to, or the event is actually going to scale down, and some of those ogres are going to, I don't know if they're going to disappear or they're going to go away somehow, run back home, I don't know what they're going to do, but it's going to scale down. And then if, let's say, 10 people join back up, then there's going to be more ogres running in from the forest and helping out, you know what I mean? And I think that's really important, and it's just amazing. Do you think about the possibilities with that?
Oh yeah, there's so much you can do with that. And actually we're getting a little bit of a hint of this at all of this War and Crytis stuff that I talked about before. Mm-hmm. Because it continues, your story continues depending on what you do.
Yeah.
And if you choose not to do such and such content, it just logically doesn't move forward. So.
Yeah.
But the fact that what I love is that this affects the entire world. If that village is gone, if those ogres take over that village, it's not, you can't be talking to a guildmate and they'll say, oh, well, I still have the village, so come on. The world loses that village.
Yeah.
The game world, it's gone.
Yeah, and I thought another really interesting example they gave was, let's say you're helping a merchant bring beer from Beetleton to Divinity's.
love it.
And so you're bringing the beer there, and on the way you see that Divinity's Reach is being attacked, right? And it's being burned down or whatever. So you put the beer down gently because you don't want to break any bottles, and then you run in there and you help them out. And so you save the village. The beer merchant is now like, oh, cool, we're so excited. So then a beer merchant actually appears in the new city.
Mm-hmm.
And you just helped, you know, the trade route from those two cities, and you helped save the village from the baddies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's beer.
Yeah, and there's beer too, which is always good. So it's like these events can actually cross over each other.
And affect one another.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like I said, the possibilities. And
it's just the realism. I mean, as realistic as you can get in a fantasy game where ogres are running around. But the realism of the mechanics are great. And something I was saying to someone the other day, if you're walking down the street and see a wallet on the ground and you reach down and pick it up, and then you walk away, the next guy that comes along is not going to see the same wallet.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, and it's just so much more realistic. This is the way it works.
Well, and that's also something they're talking about, rewarding explorers in this game, where if you want to explore, and you go out and you explore every, you know, nook and cranny of this area, and then you go back tomorrow, it might be completely different. You know, that same area, because
depending on what's
happened. Yeah, depending on how players have either helped or not helped certain areas and you know, invasions and all this kind of thing. So I think that's it's revolutionary. Now, to think about how they're going to do it, they say it's not going to be instanced. It's going to be a persistent
world. Now, we are going to have some instancing.
Yeah, well, but I mean, in this part, it's not going to be instanced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the instancing will actually be in the personal hero's storyline, and their dungeons too. But what I think, I don't know, they haven't really said anything, but I guess speculation on my part is that they will have areas, kind of like zones, that you can get into, and anyone can zone into these. You know, you can run over and run into the zone, much like they have now, but anyone can join. And in these zones, these events happen, because you can't really have these types of things happen just all over the place at all times. You know, they said that it might be different every time.
Yeah, it's just depending on where your story is.
Yeah.
It's going to make sense.
And they did make sure to point out, too, that these will be in cycles, a lot of these. So, mm-hmm. But the cycles will be, it won't reset all the way back to the beginning, or at least most of them won't every time. You know, it won't run like 1 hour, and then you're in the middle of a battle, and then the time limit's up, it's got to reset back, and you're like, well, what the heck? So they're not based.
Everything you're fighting just disappears.
Yeah.
You win.
They're not based on things like that. They're based on what happens in the world. So if I think one of the examples was, if you take over a certain area and you kill the commander, it kind of sets them back a little bit. But then after a while, they're going to get a new commander. They're going to recruit a new commander. So then they're going to move forward from that point back on if you just don't do anything, you know.
Right, because they're working for a goal too.
Yeah.
As much as an AI can.
Yeah. To kick our butts, right?
Yes, they won't. It's not going to happen. But the cool thing is, too, some of the events just within the world that recycle the dynamic events, they said, like, you know, it could be waiting for the sun to set and night to fall, or for the weather to be the right way.
Yeah.
And there are just so many little things that will be changing every little aspect every minute.
Yeah. And I think another really important part of this is the reward system.
I love it.
You're not going to be killing things to get that special loot drop. You know, you're not going to, if there's an event going on, a dynamic event, and you run in and you're toward the end of the event and you're like, whoa, it looks like they almost got the dragon down, but I'm going to run in and help anyway. The way that was set up before I hate to pick on Warhammer, but in the public quest in Warhammer, a lot of people would see that it was almost done and they would say, screw it, I'm not going to jump in there and help now because I won't get as good of a reward. Or there are the people who sit in the sidelines and wait until it's almost over, then they run in and hurry up and do something. Because what it would do is it would roll to see who got the rewards. The top 10 were random, I think, and it wasn't really – like, you could bust your butt, get the best points out of anyone in that public quest, and it would roll, and you could – not get any rewards, and it was
and the guy that came in at the last minute took two hits.
Yeah,
he gets the good
stuff. And it was very, very frustrating. So, but the way they're doing this now is they're making it so that you, the amount of reward, experience, and something called karma are all going to be distributed based on how much you participated in this event. And what you do is you turn the karma and the rewards into a special vendor towards the items. So, like, if you can save up and get, you know, you keep doing these and you save up and you can get the special items that you want to get. You don't have to depend on that, you know, anything in the quest itself or the event itself to drop what you were looking for.
Right. It sounds like it's pretty much, it's effectively replacing loot. Mm-hmm. And it has turned into a currency system to get gear and things that you need.
Yeah, which that is not new at all to MMOs, but I think it's a lot of games kind of mix the two, where they have rare drops and a, you know, kind of a death toll type of thing. That's what they call it in Fallen Earth here. kind of a death toll, you know, currency type of thing. So I just think that that's good that they're doing it strictly. With the karma points. I'm not 100% sure. Are the karma points the things you turn in?
Yes, karma is, it builds up, and some merchants will only accept karma in exchange for goods and services.
Okay, cool.
So it's almost like a secondary currency.
Cool.
Yeah.
I look forward to that so much.
And there's no more squabbling over the good loot or camping whatever to get the drop.
Yeah, or letting your party die and then waiting until they the timer expires and then getting all their greens.
Not that that ever happened to you, right?
Never. So, I think overall, this game, I think, will revolutionize a lot of things. And it's easy for us to say as, you know, fanboy and fangirl. Mm-hmm. But
I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, but hopefully we can present a lot of this information to people throughout the life of this podcast and kind of let people know not only the current events, but also just some really in-depth information on what this game is all about and why you should be playing it with us, right?
Definitely. Well, and the thing about this, and this isn't a fangirl thing, but this is what they've looked at, and I'm actually going to read this because this is the central idea of why this is going to be so great. In the dynamic events overview at the very first when we heard about this, they said when building an MMO, we had to examine every core piece of accepted content from traditional games in the genre and ask how can this be improved? And what they've done here is gone through and said, all right, what's frustrating or flawed or something that's not working in the general MMO community, and how can we fix this? Mm-hmm. And that's what the whole thing is centered around.
Yep. And that's what they did essentially with Guild Wars 1 as well. You know, they, mm-hmm. Although a lot of the choices they made there, I mean, they're all great, but I think that they, you know, with no jumping is one.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, how many times do we hear people say, I would love to play Guild Wars, but you can't jump in it, you know,
approximately 18 times a day, I think, at last count.
So you can jump in Guild Wars 2. They've already said, and you can swim, and there are underwater cities.
Yes.
And underwater battles.
So cool.
It's going to be incredible.
I wonder if the underwater battles are going to be really slow.
I don't know. I hope they use stuff like cyclone, like underwater cyclone kind of things, like for the Elementalist.
Oh, that would be fun.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Yeah.
But before we go,
we're going to do it again.
Yeah, we're going to go a little nuts here, but looks like our hour is just about up, so.
But we'll have more next week.
Yes, we'll have more next week, and we're going to try to do this every week. I say try because I've been doing this for a long time, and it's not always something you can do every week. but
there is not for a lack of information.
Oh, no, definitely not. We will, like I said, we'll talk about information, we'll talk about current events, we'll do everything. Everything you have known and loved about the old Guildcast, plus more. We're like,
Dad's got me.
Oh, that's true.
In spite of that, it will be very good.
Yes, that's true. So here we are telling you that our podcast is awesome and you need to listen to it. But join us next week and you'll be able to tell for yourself, right?
Yes, please.
So until then, this is Sean.
I'm Ruby.
And we'll see you then.